You are listening to Friends of Europe's podcast. Don't miss our debates on global and European issues that span political, economic, social, and environmental challenges, and follow our website at friendsofeurope.org.
As you can see, there's no protocol. This is really about talking to each other, having a real conversation about what I think is going to be and is really the pivotal question of our time. So we've got this Agenda 2030. We've agreed on the Sustainable Development Goals. We agreed on this last year in New York. And the talk was good. The rhetoric was fantastic. It was very uplifting. But what on earth are we going to do about it if we do not have the money? And where is this money going to come from? So when I sat down with my colleagues at Friends of Europe, and we thought about it, and we said, great, you know, all the great and the good have come up with these fantastic goals and noble ambitions, but no money, no SDGs. So we decided to actually try and push this agenda forward. And we're pushing this agenda forward with your help. Because without your input, without your insights, we're really not going to get anywhere. This is really a collective effort. So we're going to talk tonight about Agenda 2030, financing it, thinking outside the box, thinking about new ideas, where will the money come from and how will it be used? And that puts, a responsibility on all of us, policymakers, international organizations, bankers, private companies, civil society actors. This is one time that we all have to work together. So As we say, there's no such thing as a free dinner. So I'm going to actually ask all of you to come in and give your opinions about this. But we're really lucky, really, to have with us two gentlemen who are going to kickstart this conversation. David Nabarro is UN Special Advisor on the 2030 Agenda for the SDGs, and he's going to speak for about 5 or 6 minutes just to set the stage for us. And then we're going to turn to our friend Lee Yong, who I'm really, really also delighted to meet because it's someone's career I followed through the years, and he's Director General of the United Nations Industrial Development Organization, UNIDO, and has to something to tell us about how UNIDO is evolving with the times. So the thing with Friends of Europe dinners is that we eat well, but we also talk and we converse and we're interactive. So as I said, everybody will have a say. If you don't have something to say, I will make sure you have something to say. So we can start now. David, you can put aside your little machine for a few minutes. And if I could just give you the floor to give us a little bit of an idea of how much of a challenge is it for you to get all this funding that is so urgently needed to get this Agenda 2030 walking.
Thank you very much, Charlotte. Everybody, I'd like to just say how pleased I am personally to be here with you. My name, you know, David Nabarro, and my role as a special advisor to the Secretary General means just a couple of things, really. First, that I've got the honour of working very closely with Ban Ki-moon, the Secretary General of the United Nations, who stays in office until the end of December. And secondly, that what I say tonight is said in his name, that I'm not speaking as me, I'm speaking as his advisor and representative. I'd like to start by focusing a bit on last year and what actually happened and why this is changing the nature of the exercise in which we're all involved. Member states of the United Nations had been negotiating the pattern that they wanted to see for the future development of our world pretty well non-stop from 2012, when we had a conference in Rio de Janeiro on sustainable development. It was nicknamed Rio Plus 20. What happened in Rio Plus 20 was countries said, we want something very different for the future development agenda from what we had between 2000 and 2015. They said, we want something that is universal, that applies to the whole of the world. We want something that welds together environmental, economic, and social aspects of development. We want something, they said, that actually engages all sectors of society, governments, business, civil society, science. And in short, they said we want something that's much more comprehensive than we've ever had before. And then they spent the period between 2012 and 2015 negotiating it. And by September 2015, what many people had perceived to be impossible actually happened. 193 members of the United Nations agreed on an agenda for the future that was based around 17 goals, 169 targets, and five central principles. Firstly, it's universal. Secondly, it's indivisible. Thirdly, no one will be left behind. Fourth, there will be integrated responses. And fifth, these will be undertaken through multi-stakeholder partnerships. Now, that's all done, agreed. A question that many of you will be asking, and I'm sure many people are asking all over the world, is it serious? Is anybody taking it seriously anywhere? Answer, yes. Not just serious. What we are now seeing is that despite all the extreme discomfort in the world of today, that governments and regional bodies, business organizations, civil society groups, churches and other religious organizations, universities, are all treating what was agreed last year, not just in September with the 2030 agenda, but in December with the COP21 climate agreement and in various other agreements. They're treating this as a manifesto for the future of our world and of its people. A manifesto that will make it possible for our world to sustain life as we know it for coming generations. And what this means is that every investment, every government spend, every activity by an NGO should be geared towards realizing the Sustainable Development Goals and the 2030 Agenda. Now, of course, not everybody knows this yet. It's still kind of evolving, but it is something that's seeping into the collective consciousness, because we've never had a plan for the world before, not a secular one. We've had a few religious ones, but this is a secular plan for the future of the world. And so we will see over the coming months and years this seeping consciousness emerging. And so what it means is, not so much can we afford it, it more is the question, how can we speed up the process of every company and every investment house actually seeing that it is their responsibility to work, to do their business, and to invest in line with this new agenda. This agenda links together peace and security, human rights and the rule of law, development and humanitarian action like we've never seen before. So you can't excuse yourself from participating by saying we've got a crisis or a conflict or we're dealing with a human rights atrocity. Every one of us, everywhere, wherever we are, is bound by this and has to make it happen. And my job working with the Secretary General is to listen to all of you when you tell us the challenges you face in aligning your business or your activities, your investments with the Sustainable Development Goals. So that's my opening comments. Thank you.
Thank you very much. David, thank you very much for also putting the link between the basic security issues that are so high on Europe's agenda today and the Sustainable Development Goals. I have a very basic question for you, really. How much money are we talking about? Do we have a figure? Because I actually haven't been able to identify one figure that would then galvanize, let's say, the international donor community and beyond to participate.
So the cost of realizing the Sustainable Development Goals is multiple trillions of dollars. Just simply for the climate part of it, we need $100 billion a year, and that is simply to help nations who need to be able to develop equitably to do so in a way that is clean and contributes less to global warming. But then you've got to add all the social goods, the environmental goods, and the economic goods, the infrastructure, and the other elements that are necessary. And we're talking about somewhere between $2 and $3 trillion, and that's just to start the whole process off. It is a multi-trillion-dollar agenda. In what I'd like to stress to you all is that the core of this has to be private spending, private investment, and business action. But there is a hugely important role for development assistance, because what we find, particularly those of us who are seeking to engage businesses to work in support of development action, that you really do need patient capital to help build the relationships, establish the context of working. Then you also need a really good international system, the UN system perhaps, to establish the standards and make sure those standards are implemented for there to be a level playing field on implementation. And lastly, you need the data sets that will enable the necessary tracking to be done to check that we're on track. So there is a big role for development assistance in order to make certain that we've got the resources required to ensure that global goods are produced in support of the substantial private sector activity that's going to be necessary to make this happen.
Okay, David, please, ladies and gentlemen, friends, please, let's do start eating. I mean, it doesn't mean you... I mean, we talk and we eat at the same time, but please do enjoy your meal. So I'm going to turn now to you, Lee Yong, and ever since you came to UNIDO, you've tried to inject a freshness into the entire dialogue on industrialization and what this means for countries, especially the least developed countries. And, of course, all of this is going to be linked to the Sustainable Development Agenda as well. Give us a little bit of a flavor of where you see the conversation going and the activities going in the coming years.
You can take that. Thank you very much. I'm very pleased to be here. You might have this important organizer. I would like to share with you what we are doing. I really learned a lot from my colleagues, David and Navarro, and about the SDGs. And also, I myself personally involved in the whole process of developing, adopting of the SDG goals. I just would like to share with you a few very quick points. SDG, challenge. This is a challenge. 17 goals and indicators and all. But actually, if we group together, it's only three pillars of SDG. Mm-hmm. One is the social sector, mainly consists of the 8 goals of the MDG. The environment is a new group, and also economic growth is another one. If we can catch the three pillars of the target instead of focusing on 17, and it will be more efficient. It's a responsibility of each member to implement the SDG goals. It's not any other organization to implement that. We should be very, very clear. We, UN organization, public sectors, private sectors, to facilitate this process. We help them to implement goals. So one of the issues is that we need to consider in the existing environment, it's very, very special. We are facing economic turn down and a tough turf. Financial crisis still leave us a big challenge. Lots of peace and security issues and other issues on the agenda. So if we move ahead with implementation, certainly we should be innovative. Also, should catch up the main sense of the how to move ahead with implementation instead of just grab 17 goals. One of the issues I really would like to share with you that we need to promote industrial development in a new way, inclusive and a sustainable industrial development. Why I really would like to promote industrial development, SDG Goal 9 is inclusive and sustainable industrialization, infrastructure and innovation. Look at the history. Those advanced countries, industrialized countries, gone through the first industrial revolution, become advanced countries. They become industrialized countries. Look at the emerging market economies. Actually, they now become a higher growth rate, growth country, because through manufacturing. East Asian countries, I think that Ambassador of Thailand here, she, of course, can tell us how Thailand, through the industrial development, become one of tiger dragon at that time. So now, African countries, two-thirds of least developed country located, they find out industrial development is one of the useful tools for them to creating job, move ahead with the growth. So the African Union Commission, 54 countries committed to industrialization for 50 years, 2063 development agenda. This is a very, very important signal to international community. If we miss the target, least developed countries, growth of this group, they still have 380 million poverty. And with the lowest level of industrial development, lowest percentage of the manufacturing add ratio, and how can we achieve the development goals, 2030 agenda? No possibility. So that is why we really move ahead with industrial development goal 9, together with other goals. And second, the financing. I fully agree. Two no's. No money, no SDG. It's true. And David told us several trillions of the... We need more financial resources. Where does that come from? One is budget money. Government need to contribute. They have responsibility. Number two, the ODA. For so many years, ODA played an indispensable role supporting country moving out of this poverty track. And number three is the development financial institutions. They could provide the financing for the seed money. And most importantly, colleagues, is private sector financing, FDI. During the third financing for development conference in Addis, we, UNIDO, strongly propose that FDI should be a wonderful focus for us to move ahead with financing for development. Look at the China's case. During the peak area, and every year the FDI come to China with 150 billion US dollar every year. But I was in charge of World Bank lending, ADB lending to China, for almost 30 years, 50 billion, 50 million. Indispensable. But compared with the FDI, this is a really tip of the nail. So I believe if private financing being put on the agenda, we will move ahead with more financing. Number three, I talk about. Number three is that SDG goals, look at the 17 goals, SDG goal 9. We provide a brochure. SDG 9, what's the relationship with other goals? We cannot depend on only single goals to achieve our ending of the poverty. So we need to work together with a partnership. Partnership with what? Government. They are major responsibility. Development financial institutions. They work already very hard. They will continue the process. And donor countries and donors and private sector, civil society. Those are the partnership we are strongly promoting. And number 4 points is that we need to work innovatively. Think about that. If we continue the process without monitoring the result, checking the result, and we will make some of the mistake we made before. And money doesn't equal to achievement of SDG. Mm-hmm. Those are not equation. So what we really need to do is that we should create something with our capacity, with our new mindset. Like UNIDO, we provide a kind of program for country partnership. What's it? We talk to the country before. Traditionally, we talk about one project, two projects, 500,000, 1,000,000. Country happy, but not enough. Now I listened to the leaders, and they said, please help us to develop industry. We need industrial development. We need a similar growth as those countries achieved. And now we created two pilot countries, Senegal, Ethiopia, because they have a strong leaders committed to the economic development. They have relatively performed administration. They have a strategy. Good strategy, and they really focus on the work, job. So stability is also one of project prerequisite. Now we are very, very happy. Two countries, after 2 years implementation of the piloting country, PCP, we call it, they creating jobs. Thousands of jobs created. And those young ladies, young people, and have job, and supporting themselves, supporting family. And women in Japan, 2/3 of the workers in those companies, lady, young lady. And the women in development, we not only just talking, they really seeing those young ladies. I have picture after dinner I will show you. And also the migration issue. Now the top agenda for EU. But I talked to them. I surprised to know the migration is actually 2/3 of them from, not from conflict countries, from Africa, East and West, two sources. We are not a genius. We picked up the South country, East country of Africa, least developed country. Creating jobs, and then settle down the people. If people have a job, they will not move. So partially we contributed to the resolution of the migration issue, refugee issue. Now, also we try to expand the coverage of the pilot country. More countries will have the similar programs. So this is a kind of experience we have. We should work innovatively. And this is now we try to move UNIDO to another level. So I'm very much appreciate the organizer, lady on my right side, and chair this important seminar, and let me have the opportunity to share what in my mind and what we are doing with all of you. But it's also a good opportunity for me, for my colleagues, to learn from all of you how to move ahead more effectively to achieve the SDG goal. My very good friend, David, certainly is my guiding person. And moving ahead, Thank you very much. Thank you for your attention. Sorry for disturbing you not eating. Just only listen to me.
Thank you, Leong. Thank you. You're the one who now needs to eat, and just to say to you that this is a collective effort. My colleagues, Natalie, Leticia, and Clotilde have been, and others have been really instrumental in getting this conversation going. So I'm really happy that you're here, and really thank you very much for giving us a comprehensive view. I'm going to open the floor in just a minute, but David, perhaps you need to just say a few words in response to what Leong has said about how you see the future, and then we are really lucky because we have all parts of the new agenda with us. We have friends from China, we have the private sector, we have banks, we have civil society, and more, and remittances issue as well. You're here, Marie-Chantal, yes, as well. So we have a lot of discussion and a lot of input from the practitioners as well. So just a few words from you, Nabarro, and then Leong, please do eat, and then let's open the floor to everyone.
First of all, Leong, you are really a powerhouse when it comes to explaining things with clarity. And thank you for very neatly setting out the different pathways for financing the really complex sustainable development agenda and stressing the really key role played by national budgets, which, of course, has huge implications for how taxation and distribution of public resources works. So thank you for highlighting that. Thank you for highlighting the important role of ODA. You picked out also the role of the financial institutions, and that, I think, is really significant. But then you came very strongly into talking about private foreign direct investment, and you showed that the FDI figures are massive compared with the concessional finance figures, which is so relevant to everybody here. And you did one other thing that I want to really commend to everybody. You stressed, first of all, that the goals are interlinked, but you picked out the real significance of employment. And I think in the current climate of a huge pressure from people outside Europe to want to come to Europe for a mix of reasons, the issue of lack of access to sustainable jobs is really significant. I was with the foreign minister of Tunisia recently, who said to me that since there was a bad shooting in a tourist resort on the coast of Tunisia, the government has faced terrible problems with inability to provide employment to young men, particularly educated young men, and this creates a big security challenge for that country. And so I think you correctly pointed out the link between employment, pressure for migration, and potential, I say potential, insecurity. And I think we should have that as an underpinning for our discussion today. So those were the two things I wanted to pick out from what you said that really struck me. And thank you for bringing those points up.
Thank you very much, David. And I'm ready to open the floor. In fact, it's something that I was thinking about today because we were having a discussion at another conference on security issues. And I thought to myself, and I did say it, the sustainable development goals are really about security. I mean, we talk about them as sustainable development, but it's sustainable security and development goal because that nexus is so clear and very evident, not just in the separate articles within the different goals, but in its inception, its conception as well. So thank you very much both. And now I'll open the floor. So please, if you are sitting on the side of me and I can't see you, you'll have to let someone know there. Natalie, you'll have to watch and see who on this, or Clotilde, to let me know who's asking. But I already have one hand up. Please just very quickly introduce yourselves and get the conversation going.
Hi, Christian Ruby. I represent the European wind energy sector. We're called Wind Europe. We represent 500 companies across the value chain, including big utilities such as Enel, EDP, EDF, manufacturers such as Vestas and Siemens, et cetera, entire supply chain. I just wanted to take the opportunity to thank you for the invitation and for the interesting interventions here. Coming to this dinner, I reflected a little bit on the tagline you've chosen: "No money, no SDGs." I used to write speeches for Connie Hedegaard in the run-up to the infamous COP15, and we were running a tagline back then, which was called "No money, no deal." What we didn't know at that point in time was that it was going to turn out to be a self-fulfilling prophecy. We didn't get any money. We didn't get any deal, really. So careful with that, and make sure we phrase it right. Another memory from that, from back in those days, was that back then the G77 was asking for money. They wanted money to sign the deal, essentially, and they said the funds need to be new and additional. What ended up happening was that the funds were few and traditional, and I think what basically went wrong was that we had a lack of new thinking, a lack of good ideas about how to do things differently. I think the key trick here is to realize that money is not everything. When you look at the deal that we struck back in December in Paris, COP21, there was no money. There was no money on the table, and that's very interesting because we've never had a more ambitious climate deal than in Paris. So something was different, and it was all about, in my view, negotiation dynamics and world changes that had happened between COP15 and COP21. But I think there's also a learning when it comes to what is it that really moves things, and if we're going to deliver on the SDGs, well, is it a lot of money that's going to do the trick? And where is that money going to come from? It's not going to come from the cash-strapped member states of the EU. We have no money left. Sorry, guys. So where is it going to come from? And maybe we should broaden our thinking here and think in other terms than money. Coming from the private sector, I believe that what we should be looking at here is making good deals that has something in it for the private sector. What makes the private sector want to engage in new markets to contribute to development? Because that's what the private sector is about. It's about helping other people in the private sector most of the time. So it's about creating development, but at a less institutional level. I think a lot of the good examples I've seen throughout my years looking at what can create growth is about resources rather than money. It's about adding resources, it's about adding know-how, it's about capacity building, essentially. And rather than thinking about allocating money with a view to getting capacity building, maybe the trick is to cut to the chase and basically make capacity building happen. I want to give you a couple of examples that I've seen that really, for me, made the trick. Realizing the challenges that we had in basically steering the negotiations in the right direction during COP15 and the run-up to COP15. I used to work in the ministry back then, in the Ministry of Climate and Energy. The ministry decided to put in place a new office that was called the action track rather than the negotiation track. What this office did was to basically second national experts to key governments, to key partnering governments. We seconded national experts to the National Development Reform Commission in China, who helped develop the 2030 scenarios of China. I don't think that the Danes should take any credit for those scenarios, but I do think that perhaps these people actually managed to help and bring about some of the knowledge that we have gathered while essentially reprogramming our own energy system. So that's one example of concrete capacity building that doesn't necessarily require a lot of money on the table, if you will. Another example that I'm seeing from my sector these days is the Vestas, the big manufacturing companies in wind energy. They've teamed up with our national grid expert and grid regulator, EnergyNet DK. So they're on a world tour, essentially, telling the story about how can you actually make this work? How can you have 40% wind in the electricity grid? To most people around the world, that this is, people don't believe that this is happening, that this is possible. We're doing it every day in Denmark. So this is another example of basically making available public knowledge and using existing public knowledge to capacity building, which I believe is an important way forward if we want to deliver on the targets. So summing up, I would say that we should perhaps think about the way we phrase this debate, not put a lot of money in, right. Create expectations about money, but
innovative thinking.
Yeah, recognize that a vision without resources is an illusion, and hence rephrase it to something like no resources, no results.
Okay, thank you very much for that. But we have a number of people here from the private sector that you have mentioned as well, and. Please, I can't remember the names of everyone, so just very quickly, do introduce yourselves.
Yes, good evening, actually. My name is Charlotte Wolf-Bai, and I'm representing Statoil. We are an energy business based out of Norway, oil, gas, and also wind. Thank you very much for the interesting contributions, and I was very inspired what we heard about foreign direct investment and development assistance and the marriage of those two. Now, we heard just now that maybe we shouldn't talk about money, but I would like to bring it back to money. And this is really a sort of a question, I guess, to everybody, because I would like to hear an answer. So how can we de-risk projects in developing countries? Because COP21 talks about bankable projects. We love to invest in bankable projects. And I think we sort of doubled our effort now to find these and help develop these bankable projects. But we're not so good at it. We need that direct support from those institutions that David was talking about. You know, we don't really have those skills. And I'm just wondering what we also heard about innovative approaches, we have to do things differently as UNIDO has sort of stepped up its efforts. So what could that different look like? How can I go and find those bankable projects, and how can I get the multilaterals as well as the bilaterals to de-risk some of the projects? Because we can't just dive in and hope for the best. That just doesn't work when you have shareholders. So it's sort of a question rather than a statement. Thank you.
Yeah. Should we... Do you want to answer this immediately, or do you want to keep this? Yeah, you do? Okay, then please pick up your microphone and do so. Yeah.
Thank you for representative from Statoil. I visit your company research center near Bergen. The very advanced technology, CO2 catch and storage technology development. I hear what we are doing is exactly facilitate the private sector development to the country needed to develop industry. We call it a PPP. Why the PPP? It's not a project-based. It's a policy-based, strategy-based. For instance, we advise the two governments, Ethiopia, Senegal, for the strategy, industrial development strategy, and government need to play the role. What kind of role? The regulations, the policy, foreign exchange, and the investment protection, the tax preferential treatment, and the financial regulations. And all those are very important for the private sector investors, when they come to a country, they need to know foreign exchange. They need to remit out the profits. They need to actually have a very quick approval process. So lots of things government need to do. And also, importantly, government need to make major investment in infrastructure, the highway, road, railway, port, electricity, water supply, etc. And in such a case, the software and hard software's hardware being created, then you have a sound environment, conducive environment for investment. So private sector would like to come. And that is exactly what we are moving into a country, help to create this, such kind of environment. So under that kind of environment, you will be safe for investment. And we, UNIDO, created lots of information on our website for our member states, their companies to access to that, the how many industrial parks in the country, what kind of policies there, and what kind of companies already there. Those information are very useful for our member state. Our member states have free access to the information.
Right.
And that is why I think we will try to solve some of the concerns from private sector. Thank you.
So your support and your information, your knowledge is very valuable. Klaus Sorensen had a question. Klaus, just quickly introduce yourself. And then the gentleman who I cannot really see.
I think actually the gentleman was before me. You want to go first? Right. It was not so much a question. I actually asked to be able to take the floor.
Introduce yourself.
Klaus Sorensen, I'm a special advisor to President Juncker. I used to deal with development and more recently with humanitarian assistance. And I actually used to work a bit with David on the reform of the international health response. And I think we are on the right track, David. And let's make sure we don't get a new Ebola anytime soon. Just one word of philosophy. Linking back to what David said, the most important political and psychological message coming out of the SDGs is that it is for everybody. It's not only for developing countries. It's for everybody to look ourselves in the mirror. Me as a Dane, I release 600 kilos of garbage every year. It's about 10 times as much as any Bangladeshi will ever get to. We are not good at gender equality. Look at our boards of directors, etc. I mean, we can go through the list. I think it's very important in all international discussions that we are clear that there's homework for all of us. Secondly, when it comes to money, I was actually also a bit shocked, Shada, with the title because I found it, you know, a bit defensive. The reality is that there is a lot of money out there. It's actually money chasing projects that don't come or are not bankable or are not secure enough and so on. But there are savings, there's zakat. We saw it in Istanbul the other day when I actually sat in meetings on Islamic finance, that is to the tune of 350 to 500 billion per year that are there if we find the correct financial vehicles. This is more for humanitarian stuff, but it has also social dimensions and so on. So the money is there. The point is, I think what our good friend from Statoil said, are these projects sufficiently secure? And that has something to do with the framework conditions. And that then brings me to the question of official development assistance. I think we have to realize that the scarce official development assistance has to help to reduce the risk. It has to become risk-informed so that it creates the conditions to release all of these other forms of finance, be it foreign direct investment, remittances, etc., etc. So it's really, I really would hope that when we look at our ODA, that we go for good governance, sound legal systems, that we make sure that there is less corruption, that we educate the people that sit in the ministries of finance. It's sometimes more important, much more important than using ODA, sorry to say, to build a motorway from the airport to the presidential palace. And by saying that, you have also understood that there are political dimensions to this. It's not easy. But I think we have to push the order towards the risk reduction. So it's not only then about governance, but it's also about the most fragile of the fragile countries that actually sit on a number of resources that we would like to bring to the market. But also, unfortunately, if they don't have jobs, then they have another business model, which is the Kalashnikov, which is fundamentalism. So combating fragility, guiding the order in the direction of the most fragile and the most risky situations is still a strong objective. But it is not the order itself that would deliver the money to deliver the SDGs. It has to be a much, much broader affair. Finally, as I said at the beginning, it's also for everybody. And at the level of the European Union, we have made a commitment to integrate the SDGs in our Europe 2020 strategy, so that what we see coming out, hopefully, from member states and from the Union as such, would also reflect it. We will be able to read it through the lenses of the SDGs. And you will probably see something to that effect in the State of the Union speech of Juncker later in the summer. But I think it's important that all of us try to organize our mind around the SDGs, because indeed they are for all of us and they are comprehensive. They actually cover almost any activity in our countries. Mm. Thank you, Shara.
Thank you, Klaus, for bringing in your experience and to pointing out for the importance of having a within the EU approach as well as outside the EU approach, which I think is quite an innovation for the European Union to actually look at itself and see how many targets that they still have to reach. So thank you, Klaus. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. Please.
Thank you. Peter Moors, chef de cabinet of the Belgian Minister of Development Cooperation. I'm not the only one, apparently, who was disappointed by the title of this discussion.
Okay, can I explain the title? Do you know the Rob Marley show? Do you know
yes,
the song,
do, but,
No
but,
Woman, No Cry?
Yes, I do, of course.
Exactly.
I do. But this is not about money. And please let not push ourselves for the next 15 years into another corner where we are agonizing about 0.7 and ODA not being there. It's not the issue. The issue is leadership, and the issue is political will for reform. And let me give you two examples. If an entrepreneur in Harare wants to send a container of his produce to Chicago, the journey between Harare and Cape Town will cost more than the journey between Cape Town and Chicago, and that's not a problem of money. Another example. In the DRC, the Democratic Republic of Congo, 65% of young children have permanent brain damage because of stunting. Permanent. It cannot be repaired. That means that 65% of young children in the DRC will not be able to be successful at school, will not be able to compete in a digital economy, will not be able to learn through their lives. Congo has received billions of ODA. This is not about money. It's about leadership and it's about political reform. And the money will follow, and it will come from the private sector, not the other way around. Thank you.
I'm going to turn to the private sector in a second. So, but I did have Eve there, so first you, and then I have the lady here. And everyone gets a word.
Thank you very much, Shada. My name is Yves Guiquero. I'm from AFD, Agence Française de Développement, French Development Agency. Just to mention that I fully agree what just have been said, and I fully disagree with the title of this dinner, which is No Money, No SDGs. This is wrong, I'm sorry. Do you know the figure? Do you know what is the amount of annual investment in developing countries? This is $10 trillion. And David just mentioned the needs of SDG. It was in the range of multi-trillion of dollars annually. So the money is there, is here. And where does this money come from? This is not international. This is not ODA. This is mainly domestic. What is the volume and the amount of international financing for development? This is quite small. ODA is in the range of $130 billion annually. international public financing is in the range of 240 billion annually. We emphasize the importance of foreign direct investment. This is in the range of $500 billion annually. The needs of SDG are multi-trillion, and annual investment in developing countries is in the range of $10 trillion. So the money is there, and the issue of SDG is not the cost. The issue of SDG is public policies, is to modify the trajectories and the pattern of public policies. And what is the main innovation of SDGs? It is to rehabilitate economic policies in order to have investment channeling in more sustainable way and in line with the SDGs. And this is very, very important. Now, we say that SDG is a cost. This is wrong. SDG, you cannot buy SDGs. You create SDGs. SDGs are value, are wealth. This is your earning. This is not cost. And the issue is not to finance SDGs, but this is to modify economic trajectories. And this is the role of economic policies. And the role of public agencies, and the role of ODA, and the role of UN agencies, of the World Bank, of UNIDO, of AFD, and other actors, and European Commission mainly, obviously, is to improve environment, to have more sustainable, more efficient investment. This is to de-risk. This is on governance. This is to create regulation. This is to trigger investment decision. And this is to create incentives and to have, as a result, a green and inclusive and sustained growth. Thank you.
Thank you. So my question to all of you here is, since the money is there, why isn't it being used to promote the certain priorities and concerns that we've identified? The money is there. We need better economic policies. So what's happening? Why are we not doing it? Please.
Thank you, Sheila.
I'll come back to you in a second. Yeah.
Sorry, Nicholas White from APCO Worldwide. You can hear me okay?
No.
Yeah, good. This is not my field, development policy, but political messaging very much is my field. And I feel that the Sustainable Development Goals have missed a trick here. I think that there was a long, drawn-out process, which was a dialogue between governments and those NGOs who were already interested. And I think there were some missing elements in that. One of the missing elements was national political processes. So we have a situation where the overseas development experts of particular governments have all agreed that this is important, but they may not necessarily be those who carry the most clout domestically. They may not be those who've got the most influence. At the same time, certainly here in Europe and also in America, we have a populism problem. We have a challenge from darker forces within our political systems, who think that it is wrong to spend our taxpayers' money on developing people from over there. They do not see this as a global gain. They see this as a loss for us and a gain for them. And I think we're losing the narrative on this, and I think we will continue to lose it unless we find a new way of telling the story. The stories are there. The Sustainable Development Goals are a good solution. There are already a number of successes to talk about. The fact is that most of Africa has lifted itself into far, far above the into the sort of median, what you call the middle-income country status. And that's true of most of the countries that 20, 30 years ago would have been seen as the least developed countries. These success stories are not being talked about in Europe except in terms of threat. And I think that's a shame. I think the development community has missed an opportunity to communicate its message more broadly. I think the goal is still open. I think it's undefended, if I can use a football metaphor, given the week that we have. But I fear that we're not deploying our best strikers in this argument, and I wish we would do it a bit more efficiently.
I couldn't agree more. And Klaus, you know what I think of the European Commission's communications on development. Lots of loopholes, lots of gaps, lots of weaknesses, and we've talked about it in the past. So communication and the narrative that you've mentioned, Nick, I think is really the key. So may I turn now to, I'm sorry, I've got a brain fade going on here, so just introduce yourself, and I actually have to give you the microphone, and then Marie-Chantal will also take the floor. So here you go.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So my name is Deirdre de Burka, and I work with an NGO, an international humanitarian and development NGO called World Vision, which works with vulnerable children and their communities around the world, in almost 100 countries around the world, to help them to overcome poverty and injustice. So we've been very interested in Agenda 2030 and the SDGs since the process of negotiating them began. We were very involved in civil society coalitions that inputted into the negotiations at national level, at global level, at EU level, and we're now very interested, obviously, in seeing how the EU in particular intends to implement the Agenda 2030. When I saw the title for the event tonight, I must say I'm suffering from a little bit of Agenda 2030 fatigue, because there's an awful lot of conferences and public events about Agenda 2030 now. I've been to a lot of them, so the title actually attracted me to register for the event, because I think it's a very honest question. It's one that probably hasn't been really addressed properly. We had the Financing for Development conference in Addis last year, which a lot of people had high expectations around would help us to have a bit more clarity about how this Agenda 2030 was going to be financed. And I think there was a lot of dissatisfaction at the end of that process. It hadn't really identified any new or innovative ways to try to mobilise the kind of financial power, I think, that's going to be absolutely necessary if all of the goals, and I think particularly the infrastructural goals, the climate and energy goals, and the implications that has for massive change in the kind of energy infrastructure that we are going to rely on in the not too distant future, I think it's going to require huge amounts of finance. So from civil society's point of view, there's a couple of, I suppose, bottom lines that we would have in terms of mobilising what I think most people would agree will be necessarily new and additional finance. It's true to say there's a lot of finance available at the moment, most of it private, but the question is, and this is a key question, is it appropriate for a global, a transformative agenda like this to rely largely on private finance? And I think the answer from civil society and other stakeholders will be no, because the truth is that in the implementation of this new framework, it will be necessary to introduce certain regulation, certain perhaps restrictions on certain type of activities, and then very strong incentives for other types of activities. And it does require the involvement of states fully in terms of regulating, legislating and so on, but also it will require a lot of public support. And I think the nature of there's a lot of public concern at the moment about the extent to which the private sector has the ear of governments, has a lot more political clout, a lot more political leverage, let's say, than other stakeholders and interest groups. And I think it is not to say that most people don't recognise that private or finance will play an extremely important role in the implementation of the new framework or the new agenda, but I think most people would want to see that balanced by strong, what we might call, public interest finance. So the question is, where will the new public interest finance come from? And in order for it to be effective, I think it's going to have several characteristics. One is that it can't increase the existing debt burdens, because there is a lot of debt, particularly in European economies at the moment, but also we're very aware the American economy has a huge debt issue. And there also are problems in other countries around the world with debt issues. So it can't increase the debt burden. I would argue it can't over-rely on private finance. It also must be, and other people have referred to this, predictable, reliable, risk-sensitive, I'm not sure what term was used there, I jotted it down, but risk-informed. And it also must be transparent, because I think there will be a lot, you know, in order for this agenda to be properly implemented, everybody has a stake. All citizens, global citizens, have a stake in it being implemented properly and effectively, and also a role in actually ensuring that it is. We all have to play our parts. So it will be really important that the way in which finance decisions are being made about how this finance will be spent, they have to be transparent. And I would suggest, again, if there's public interest finance being matched with private finance, certainly public interest stakeholders will want to make sure that it's being done in a way that isn't benefiting the private interests at the expense of the public interest. So it will have to ensure that also, I think. And it also, the big promise of the new agenda is that it will address poverty, not just address, but eliminate poverty and address inequality. And I think to do that, we need to think about the role that this new finance can play in providing universal social protection floors for all global citizens. And that's something that seems very utopian at the moment, very way off, but it doesn't necessarily have to be if we think very innovatively. So the suggestion would be that we need to think about an unconventional source of finance. Yeah. And this is probably a very controversial thing to propose, but I think it's worth doing if we're really thinking out of the box. There's a lot of debate at the moment about quantitative easing and the kind of unconventional methods that need to be used because of the low and very anemic levels of economic growth in different parts of the world, and particularly in Europe. But perhaps if we are looking at unconventional approaches, we might look at something that would meet the needs of this, you know, where the implementation of this new agenda is concerned, right, and that would address that public versus private, the balance of public interest versus private.
Thank you. Interest. Thank you very much, Deirdre. I think the conversation is moving on very nicely into that sector. I saw hands going up. I know Constance and Marie-Chantal. So Marie-Chantal, why don't you take the floor first, and then I'll give it to Constance and yourself, and then I have Andrew, and I have you as well. Everyone gets a chance. Go ahead.
Thank you. My name is Marie-Chantal Rutonze. I'm the founder and president of the African Diaspora Network in Europe. Maybe many of you don't know about this organization. We are an umbrella organization for diaspora, African diaspora in Europe, and our aim is to mobilize the competencies and the talent from diaspora and resources for development in Africa. I wanted just to quickly answer the question of Shada. The money is there, but why things are not working? The answer is simple for me. We all know the metaphor: give man fish, you will feed him for a day, but teach a man how to fish, you will feed him for a lifetime. And the right question would be how this money is spent, and how does projects are inclusive for actors in the north, in the south, and how does project or these leases transfer the autonomy, and how that them enable the countries to move beyond aid and to move to Akia to own their destiny. I can give an example that is simple, that just to show that resources are not lacking in developing countries. If you take a country like Congo, that is financing all the new technologies, Congo holds 90% of natural resources. So we all have mobile monies, and we travel a lot. And in Congo, you don't even have a lot that goes to the mining. So I think that it is much more about how the money is it raised, and how the local actors are on the cornerstone of initiative. So,
Marie-Chantal, can I ask you, so when your remittances go back to the countries of origin of your members, do you have any control over how that money is spent? You're sending it to private individuals, right?
Yeah, that is the main challenges, the main challenge of remittances. I'm so sorry for those of you who will not understand my key messages because I'm a French speaker, but I will try. So the reason why it is very difficult to channel diaspora remittances, it is because it's a process of peer to peer. So when I send money to my family, no one knows, and sometimes the money is spent day to day needs, and I think that there can be more efficiency if there was a system. There was a system that enable at the governmental level or national level to channel remittances. 75% of diaspora remittances are unknown because they are sent through informal channels, and that is because the cost to send money in developing countries are really very high. In Africa, to send money to Africa, it is 95%, while sending money from Germany to France is only 1%. So it is clear that we cannot succeed that way. Another problem with diaspora remittances, it is also that the remitter themselves maybe don't have the opportunity to strongly access the economic and developmental enablers. When I see the situation in diaspora, African diaspora, specifically in Europe, they still operate in the margin of society. I will not say that the fault is from only the policies in Europe, from the diaspora themselves, but I think if we know that diaspora remittances today is twice the official development aid, why don't we find strategy to make this resource more efficient?
Yeah. So, thank you very much. I think that's a question I will ask both Nabarro and Li Yong at the end, but thank you very much for making that point. Please, Constance, and then Andrew, I'll come to you.
Thank you. I'm Constance Kahn. I'm with the European Investment Bank. As some of you may know, we are actually the largest multilateral lender. We do some 85 billion per year, but that is, of course, nowhere near to the trillions that that David just referred to. We're not only a very large lender, but we're also a very large borrower. And I think that element is also important because we have been able to work and work with the other, you know, MDBs on, for example, creating these green bonds that ring-fence money in order to support climate action projects. When I heard all of this debate about money, I was thinking money is definitely not the solution for all, but in my view, money that de-risks, money that tracks results, and money that partners, that is money that talks. I think that for, you know, also if we look to climate, I think we have been able to make, you know, real progress when we were able to put climate on the agenda of the of the finance ministers. And I think it's equally important now to make the link between the development and the finance agenda. Some of you, you know, may know, we talked about development, we talked about migration, we are talking a lot in Brussels about the nexus between development and migration. We're talking a lot about innovative finance, and I think we already have, you know, some early lessons that we may want to look at, and which, you know, the Commission has actually already put on the table last week. As some of you may know, we are very much involved in this whole investment challenge for Europe. And to a certain extent, some of the issues that I heard during the debate very much mirror some of the investment challenges that we also see outside the EU. So I think the Commission is smart in looking at a kind of FC for outside, because it touches upon a number of the building blocks that we discussed. One is around indeed financing, but financing that crowds in and financing that de-risks, and the risk sharing, you know, that is really the key element of this plan. But clearly, you know, and we have been saying that as well, money is nice, but if the environment, you know, to invest in it, if the obstacles to investing are not being taken care of, you can pour, you know, you can try to pour a lot of money to it, but it will never, you know, deliver the trillions that we heard about it. So this enabling environment, getting, you know, the right policies, that end of the day will help rewiring the economy, and I think that is, you know, what we're talking about, is critically important. I also heard indeed about capacity building. That's the third, you know, element of the Juncker plan, the advisory hub, because we need good projects. We need, you know, entrepreneurs, and sometimes we really need to help to make sure that we have, you know, those bankable projects, that these feasibility studies are being done. So again, that is an important element, and I think also I would like to, you know, end with that. I think this has to be done in partnerships, because in order to deliver, you know, this agenda, we really have to put the relative strength together.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree, Constance. I mean, that has been the running theme throughout, I think, this conversation, and perhaps tomorrow during the European Development Days as well. It's about partnership. Andrew, I'm going to give you the floor. Can I make a plea now to be slightly shorter and more sort of snappy in your comments, because we're going to have dessert and then we have a big day tomorrow. We start really early at the EDDs, and for some of us, I've noted everyone who's going to speak. I'm going to give all of you a chance. You're all our guests, so we're very happy to have you here and hear your voices. But I would like a little bit more discipline in terms of the timing that you keep to. So, Andrew, I'm going to pass you the microphone here. And I'm going to get that microphone.
Shara, thanks, and I hope I'm a disciplined member. No, just to say that I work for International IDEA. It's an intergovernmental organization, and the focus of the institute is to focus on supporting democracy globally. I sit here also today with my chairperson, and I'll come to that, the ambassador of Mongolia. Mongolia, as a member of International IDEA, is chairing the institute this year. So I speak with him in presence. Just to say, for me, I don't want to go into the debate of the finance. I think there's another step that we first have to do, and one of your publications dealt with it. Let's walk the talk. And I think it is clear now that we need to take the SDGs to the national level. It will be implemented at the national level. And I think that stage we have to now support. We have to select and adapt targets to national circumstances. And by doing that, and how we do it, through an inclusive approach, everyone needs to be involved. Citizens, parliaments, governments, civil society. By doing that, we will ensure the ideal of Goal 16, accountability. Goal 16 and its accountability element is there to ensure that that goal and accountability becomes an enabler of all the other goals. And that brings me to the interlinkage that someone said of these different goals. And through those linkages, it brings me to another issue, Shara, that we haven't discussed tonight, is the importance of policy coherence for, and I emphasize, sustainable development. That is key for these SDGs to succeed. Doing that, it will create the political will, and then we can look at innovative financing matters. But having said that, I want to state that with the key element of accountability, people in any country can also have control over how ODA is spent. They can account through their processes for how it is spent and whether it's spent at the right angles, perspectives, emphases.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. I've suddenly lost... Oh, you have it. All right. So,
I need one of my microphones back so I get in control of some of you. since you do have the microphone now, I'm happy to hear your voice.
Thank you. Marianne Besançon from Total. I hear a very interesting consensus around this table about the fact that the issue is not really money per se, but more about governance, political leadership, and willingness. Then I would like that we discuss one step further what has been said. We all have said that we would love to invest in secure projects, in projects where investment is protected in these many countries. How to ensure that? Let's be practical sometimes. Usually, to get a solution, to influence someone to do something, you use both things. You use a carrot and you use a stick. Here, carrots is easy. It is money. It is sending experts. What is the stick? Do we have any power? I hear around, and that's true, that we have no control about how ODA is spent. This is clearly the legitimacy of autonomy of governments, of countries, of their own decision process. But then, what is the power around to influence properly and to lift the obstacles for investing? Let's try to be practical. Is it to have the refusal of a seat of the UNO? It's just, I'm joking, of course.
No, but I guess the stick really is an unstable and very, very volatile world. I guess the stick is a general stick for all of us. If we don't do it, we suffer the consequences, the cost of non-doing, in a sense.
Is that stick very relevant for many non-reliable, say, governance some countries?
Yeah.
That's the point.
Do they care? Do they care?
Just to very open
good.
The debate.
No, very good point. I'm going to turn now here, and then I want the ambassador of Thailand. I also want our Chinese friends from CIRD, and I want our friend from JICAS as well. So could we first go here? Yeah, you have the microphone.
Yes, Céline Chavaria from the Institute for European Environmental Policy. I was getting worried when I heard the word consensus. Have an aversion to consensus, because I always feel if there is consensus so quickly, probably the right people are not in the room. I really think that it's about aligning resources. So I do like your title, but I think it's aligning both financial resources and natural resources. And I was very glad to hear Mr. Sorensen talking about the fact that the homework needs to start here. It's not about the Great North doing all sorts of wonderful things and the Bad South that needs, better governance. Goal 12, sustainable consumption and production, we are very far from it in Europe. And as sustainability think tanks, we met together in Europe and we said, well, what is it that we could do what sort of knowledge do we need to produce in terms of knowledge that would really allow monitoring and accountability and really project the right sort of data that the public can understand and can use to make duty bearers accountable? There's a huge problem of policy coherence as well. If you look at the IPCC doing a scoping study for 1.5 degree, what sort of knowledge do we need to make sure that mitigation options would be actually compatible with the other SDGs? So there's a huge knowledge gap here that needs to be filled. And also we don't have time and we need solutions at scale. So we need monitoring and evaluation and rapid feedback loop so we don't waste too much time with the wrong sort of solutions. And finally, in Europe, I think it's super important that we start aligning our public resources, the multi-annual financial framework, the CAP reform. We also need to align our natural resources, so the circular economy package. And we need to find the right sort of incentives that we shift the trillions from the private sector, both because they are bankable projects, but also because we are creating an environment where you have new business models and innovation. I was last week at Unilever talking about new business models and how can we help SMEs and entrepreneurs in, in Europe, working with larger companies to innovate and find those solutions that will allow us to be on track for Goal 12. Mm. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry, I do apologize. I've forgotten your name. It's Brain Drain, Brain. Yes, please. You had your hand up a long time ago. And then I'll turn to Wei Wei Feng, please.
Thank you. Just a couple of remarks. I think there has been a lot of this.
Quickly.
I'm sorry. My name is Gisela Palleras. I work for GSK, GlaxoSmithKline pharmaceutical company. So just a couple of remarks. I think there has been a lot of discussion about public, private. I do think one of the key success factors here will be the moment where we start breaking silos. I think when I think about some of the most successful projects we've had recently, it has been in partnership with NGOs, in partnerships with governments, in partnerships with other companies. So that's part of innovation as well. So I just wanted to mention that point. And then the other thing I wanted to mention is that, you know, the thing we see is that, for example, someone mentioned Ebola before. So when something like this happens, we're all putting resources, we're all doing things, and things happen. We get results, okay? We get a new vaccine, we get... So why is it that we can do that when there is an emergency, but we cannot do that on some of the key challenges we face? And I think that's a question I wanted to raise for reflection.
Thank you very much indeed. Thank you. Ambassador from Thailand, please.
Thank you. Vasya Mathalang, I'm Ambassador of Thailand to Belgium, the EU, and Luxembourg. Thank you. I will try to be very brief and not diplomatic. Yes. Let me tell you my experience, the experience of Thailand, that I would like to share with you. Economic growth and real sustainable development starts at home. It comes from within. It comes from the determination of the government. It comes from the seriousness of the government to implement what is good for the country. So ODA is something that we value in the 60s and 70s, but we learn that we have to be self-reliant. That is why from 1980s, 1990s onward, our development has geared toward more of the supporting role of the government. The government, well, could be leading role as well, because our government is supporting an investment and foreign direct investment, which is supporting of which has the goal of sustainable development, sustainable and responsible investment. So we have recently announced a strategy, a 10-year strategy on foreign direct investment. We are going to promote foreign direct investment, which has led to sustainable development in our country. And you get lots of tax incentives and all these corporate income tax. I think the role of the government is key. I was ambassador to Senegal. That country, after long years of dictatorship, I would say, has come up with a new president in 2012. And Director General Leon was talking about this project, and I'm very supportive of that of this government, because Macky Sall is a president who is working for his country and really very determined, and this is something that we admire. And Thailand also has been helping Senegal to achieve their strategy. If there is a role for the international player to do for developing countries like mine, other countries in the third world, is that you should do a supplementing role, like encourage more of somebody mentioned capacity building in tax reform, for example, collection of tax system, good governance and the rule of law, and anti-corruption. And this is the only way that we could achieve this SDG. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you, Ambassador. And domestic resource mobilization is a big aspect of the SDGs. I'd like to turn to either Dong Ni or Wei Wei Feng to give us a view of China. And I have two ladies over here who want to come in. Three ladies over here who want to come in. Fourth person who's not a lady. wants to come in, and another gentleman who wants to come in. Okay, so we've got about and seven. So, okay, guys, if we do want to be in time for the EDDs, guys and girls, if we want to be in time for the EDDs tomorrow, you'll have to be quite to the point. But before I give you the floor, is it you, Wei Feng, who... yeah, all right. So, please.
Okay, I'll try to be brief.
From our partners in Hainan, in Haiku, CIRD.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. My name is Wei Wenfeng from China Institute for Reform and Development. So this is not my field, but I'd like to share with my perspective of a citizen from a developing country. So actually, the first point, I really agree with the ambassador from Thailand, actually, which is also my first point. That is, when Shala says money is there, yes, for the moment. What about tomorrow? It may not be there. Or less. So we need to actually have sustainable financial resources, which we cannot really count on this ODA forever. And it's not reliable forever, I would say. So this is what I said, I really agree with the MSS, the economic development of the country itself is really the ultimate sustainable way to have this. So my second point is actually, of course, here we have... most of the representatives from developed countries or industrial economies who really care about the development of the developing countries and the least developed countries, so which is a very good symbol of to care about the good of the human being. So here comes this North-South cooperation or South-South cooperation. How to cooperate probably is very important because, of course, this comes to, for example, there's a huge... demand of or need of investment in Asia in infrastructure, but ADB itself is not enough, and this is why a developing country like China proposed this AIIB, of course, which that we have the support and of cooperation from many developed countries in Europe and of course in other parts of the world. I think this is a very good way of North-South and South-South cooperation because. It addressed the really pressing issue of infrastructure. Of course, according to China's experience, in the old times, we have a saying that if you want to get rich, they have to build the road first, and then which turned out to be a very, really effective way that nowadays, in many parts of China, especially, I'm a country boy from not so well-developed area in a comparatively better developed region in the southeastern coast. And my impression is that in the past, we have traveled by bus for 5 hours to the capital city of the province. Now it probably only takes 2 hours, and it will be less in a few years. This helps a lot with local development. Of course, that is why that this AIIB initiative that talks at building infrastructure, of course, not just roads, bridges, but we also need to have power. Electricity, we need to have telecommunication infrastructures. All these are very important. Even internet, of course, some high-tech companies really doing to offer internet for some the least developed countries. Because when these less developed regions, when they have the access to all these, to the market, to the information, then they have the better opportunities to development. So this is why it's so important that I mentioned this, the second point, as an AIIB example. But another example I like to say with the second point is inclusive, because one of the friends said inclusive development is important. But I think I will say inclusive approach is also very important. For example, when you talk about trade deals, trade negotiations, of course, as a traditional better developed countries, we say that we have standards. We have certain standards. But... are these standards practical and applicable in those developing countries? So we have to take this into consideration. Of course, on one hand, we shall not really compromise too much, but we probably need to find certain practical way so that we could, on one hand, for example, certain companies, or we maintain our standard. But on the other hand, at the same time, it could be accepted probably in a step-by-step way that is applicable in developing countries, so that this make it happen that both really benefit.
Not just say, okay, we have to have this high standards. Or the other one said, no, we cannot do that. It's not for the moment. But so this is the second book. The third point is, of course, as we say, that 1,000 readers would have 1,000 interpretation of Hamlet. And that's the same for this development approach, or really when you come to the implementation, or either using the ODA or other ways. So I would say that 100 countries, probably we have hundreds of approaches of development, because the situations in every country is really different. So that is why some of our friends said, we really need to go to talk to these people, that people, we have more participation from different groups of people, so that to make this more inclusive. So, two more words.
Two more words.
That's all. Thank you.
No, Wei-Feng, thank you very much for coming in. And you haven't mentioned it, but I will. I will mention the One Belt, One Road, which is China's, I think, yes, contribution to, in a sense, the SDGs, to development overall. And you haven't mentioned, but I will. And it's part, very much part of our Europe-China discussion that we hold on a regular basis with our partners in China, including the CIRD. So thank you very much
for your contribution. It also connects the developing and the developed countries.
Absolutely. So thank you very much. Your partner, who's now busy eating dessert, but can still come in, please do have your say. And then I have the ladies waiting impatiently here. So
of course, and we're watching you like hawks. I prefer the ladies have the last word. So actually, I wanted to first thank our host, and I wanted to thank my colleagues from the UN for kicking this off. My name is Till Brewitt with UN Capital Development Fund, and I wanted to defend the title. because a couple things. No, so one with the SDGs, what I think can be good about the SDGs is that they can be inspirational, because you can put the words "I want" in front of most of the SDGs, and it works as a sentence. And so I think that's one thing to keep in mind. In terms of money, I think money is the issue, but I think we're thinking of money in too big of a term. I think we need to think of money as the money in people's pockets, because the people want the SDGs for themselves, and the only way they're going to be able to accomplish them for themselves is if they have access to the services they need and they have the ability to pay for them. And I just argue that what we're experiencing really in development is a huge market failure. It's not necessarily a lack of market, but multiple market failures. So I think we've got three companies, maybe four, to watch over the next 10 years in terms of what they might accomplish for development. And our institution is obsessed with last-mile finance and working with the private sector. First, Facebook. I think we completely underestimate the power of Facebook in terms of development. You should see the outreach of Facebook in Africa and its ability to communicate messages, create networks, and build a movement. If we want the SDGs to really take hold and people to aspire to them, we need to start thinking about Facebook. Second, Google. David talked about analytics. Google has the incredible ability to analyze data, people's data about people, and figure out what they need and how to market it to them and make it appealing. The third company is Alibaba. Alibaba has figured out how to get almost anything to anyone in China, and that's amazing. And then the last company is M-Pesa. And M-Pesa has figured out a way for almost anyone, anywhere in Kenya to pay for what they need. So I think we do need to think about money, but we need to think about how do we allow people to use the money they have. And a lot more people have money than I think we believe. They just don't have an outlet to spend it in a reasonable way for the goals that they want to achieve. So if we can focus on that, I think we can talk about money, but get it down to the individual level.
Thank you. Thank you very much indeed for that. Because instead of seeing the poorest, the last mile, as victims of something, they're really empowered people with money in their hands that can be used with the right tools, instruments are there. Thank you very much indeed for pointing that out. I'll pass you the microphone.
Thanks a lot. I'm Elie Schlein. I'm a member of the European Parliament, and I try to be very quick because I'm well known in the Parliament for being a quick speaker. So I agree. I agree with the title, and I agree also with the statement that it's not all about the money, of course. It's about changing public policies, it was said before. And that's why I would add to the list that was made before of the stakeholders to involve in the discussion, the parliaments, the national parliaments and the European Parliament, because who better than us can monitor the progress in the implementation of the Sustainable Development Goals across every and each country. It's true, the universality is maybe the most innovative aspect of the new agenda, and that's what we can do in every member state of the UN, in every member state of the European Union, and make our governments accountable to the progress on the various SDGs and to avoid the cherry picking of only a couple of goals that are okay with the governments and not the other ones, and ensure this way the integrated approach that David mentioned before, and is also very important. One other thing, of course, we are talking with the Commission here to ensure it has a European implementing framework for the SDGs, which has not to be and should not be the 29th, aside from the 28th from the member state. It has to have an integrated role, an integrative role. Then, we have, of course, to step up the efforts, to see the government step up their efforts, because we are far behind in the commitments, not only of ODA. I would like to put something into the conversation now that I haven't seen, I haven't heard a lot. I was the rapporteur for the European Parliament on tax avoidance and tax evasion in developing countries. It was mentioned before by the ambassador. Last year, the African Union, with its report, said clearly that in the last 50 years, Africa is, of course, estimated to have lost nearly $1 trillion in illicit financial flows. That is a sum that is roughly equivalent to all the ODA receive in the same period. Can you imagine it? It's like we are taking with one hand what was given with the other. So we have to do something on this, seriously, because otherwise we were asking the Commission, for example, to give an action plan with clear things to help developing countries address this issue. The first one was mentioned before. Technical and fiscal assistance to fiscal authorities, capacity building with these countries. It's less than 1% ODA right now. It has to change. Otherwise, we will not make them able to, of course, face this this issue. And then we were asking, of course, to involve developing countries in the tax, in the global tax reform as well. That's crucial. Otherwise, it will not work. We were asking for, of course, automatic exchange of information, country by country reporting, involving them as well. And we were asking for impact assessment of the European fiscal policies in developing countries. That's crucial. Some member states are doing this. The Netherlands, for example. They're also leading the tax initiative from Addis Ababa. I think this is a very important topic, and it's very nice to be here with so many important members of the private sector, because I think that we should fight this fight together. That's crucial, because it hasn't to be, I mean, we were talking about creating the right environment for business and for investment, and I totally agree with that, but it doesn't have to be a race to the bottom in terms of fiscal advantages for the in the developing countries. That is not working. We should do more to ensure fair condition and, of course, sustainable growth with another model of development. Yeah, but okay. Two very last points, because they're very crucial. Root causes of migration. I'm also working on the Dublin reform. You know how much this was waited for in the European Union. It's totally true. Conflicts, climate change, and inequalities, and they are all in the SDGs. So it's about policy coherence for sustainable development. I totally agree with that. We need trade policies, fiscal policies, migration, foreign policies that are coherent between each other. And last point, the importance of data. Disaggregated data. If you can't measure something, it does not exist. Let's talk about gender inequalities or inequalities themselves. We have to find a way to measure them and to tackle this problem together. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. I think the lady on your right. And can I have my microphone back?
I'm Dania Tondini. I'm from AVSI Foundation, which is an international NGO based in Italy, not very big, and so I'm very honored to be here in this very interesting debate. Money, I also agree that it's not a matter of money. As we can see also in our personal life, because I think that we have not to forget that we always speak about people, about individuals, about human beings like us. And so when we think of what is useful, what the people needs for having a better life, we have to think for what is the same for us. From our experience, from our boots on the ground, we have seen a lot of money not very well spent in development in all these years. We have also seen companies which have tried to go in developing countries, but who were discouraged because it was a different world from the one they were used to. So in all this debate, we have not to forget the role of civil society organization, which is not only to be watchdog, to control, to make politics, but also to make the last mile, to be together with the people and to make this capacity building, which is not just a technical issue, but to raise the human capital. Also in Europe, what we lack most are skilled workers. A lot of companies in Europe don't find the workers they need. And so I think that this is very important and is not, I mean, public and private, there is, I think that are all the categories, because when a private organization like us make something which is useful for everybody, it is a public action. And so I want to conclude saying that nobody has the winning receipt for development. No. Otherwise, we wouldn't succeeded before. So it's very important to learn from experience. It's something which is said very often, but I think that also political choices have to follow this declaration, because a funding mechanism are not a technical issue, are a political decision. And what has to be measured in the actions is a political decision. So, concluding, what gives sustainability is the subject. What we were saying, the word was said, the responsibility. And what can make an activity sustainable is that if there is somebody, a person or an organization, which takes the protagonism of his own life and wants to be responsible for his community, his country. So I think this can arise a new thinking.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Okay, so floor to you, and then I want to go to Christophe, and then I have three or four people still asking. So please, I think if we do want to wake up early and get to the EDDs, we'll have to be very, very short and to the point. So may I make a plea for that? Please do go ahead.
Absolutely. So my name is Barbara Smith. I'm from the U.S. Agency for International Development. And first, I wanted to say that I appreciated hearing from all of you. I've been to many of these SDG events, and I feel like every time I learn something new by just sitting and listening. Couple quick points. I won't reiterate. I would say first, I felt like there were a lot of times where I agreed. It's, you know, it is both technical, it's political, it's their funding is important, but the process, the mechanisms, et cetera, they're important. A couple things that haven't been said or are not maybe emphasized as much as I would have liked. One is the long-term nature of this process. It's that it needs to be sustained. We need to be patient, but we need to be determined. Country context, a number of people touched on that. It's something that it's a mantra at USAID. The importance that each context is unique. And that's why as people were talking and they were describing certain things, I feel like, yes, in this thinking about specific country context, tax policy is important. And here, but it doesn't always apply. Implementation domestically, just two words on, or two things about the U.S. government.
because I don't think we've done a good job of talking about what we're doing to look at domestic implementation within the United States. We do have a domestic policy council that is looking at this, is looking at the way to do this. We're out there, we're talking to people across the country about how we implement domestically as well. We are also looking at how we implement through the work that we do as USAID, recognizing that our ODA should be a catalyst for what is really needed. We are a very small piece of the puzzle. Also on policy, we talked a lot about tax, but we didn't talk about customs reform. That's something else that I would have liked to have talked about a little bit more. In terms of partnerships, just to mention that we are heavily engaged in exploiting partnerships. To give you an example, we have an initiative called Power Africa. It is a $40+ billion initiative, and the funding that is coming for private sector is over 30. So it is huge. The importance of those private sector partnerships for us. I also, we sort of alluded to this, but we didn't talk directly, I don't think, about SDIP, Sustainable Development Investment Partnership, but just to mention that that's also something that we feel is very important because it is exploring some of these things we talked about, blended finance, and some of the other ways to look creatively at how we raise development finance. Have I gone on too long?
I think we need to move on. But thank you very much for those insights and those inputs. And I think it'll be very important during the conversation we have over the next 2 days to raise those issues, because I will be chairing a number of events for Friends of Europe and also for IFDA on innovative financing for development. So we'll bring that in. Thank you very much. I'm going to move on. Christophe.
Yes, thank you. I'm Christophe Yvetot. I'm the head of the UNIDO office to the European Union here in Brussels. I would like to insist on one thing. Let's not forget that this whole SDG agenda is about sustainability. And it's really about to change our economic system globally. And I would say that it's good, and we really congratulate the European Union for this circular economy package. And I think that's the right direction. However, we still have a global value chain, and what we do clean here, maybe we might do it a different way outside. And I think to make it work, we really need to embark all countries into this agenda of circular economy, but also sustainable energy, energy efficiency. And nobody will succeed alone. That's why we really need a partnership. We really need what we are doing tonight, and congratulations that we need to bring all people around the table, NGOs, private sector, and governments, and this not need to be done in the center of Brussels here, but we need to think of how we do it at country level, at regional level, and so on. So I will stop here. For this, we need also a lot of technology transfer, knowledge transfer, exchange, industrial cooperation, and green finance. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Christophe. So I have Dong Ni, who needs to come in. The gentleman over here whose name, unfortunately, I've got a brain fade happening. Matsushita-san and Ambassador Lovejoy as well? No. Okay. So, Dong Ni, please.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me here. And He Dongni from China Institute for Reform and Development. CIRD is a reform think tank based in Hainan, but serves the whole country. My perspective is money is absolutely not everything, but money do matter. I have only three keywords. The first keyword is priorities. We need to list priorities in the context of shrinking resource due to the sluggish global economic growth. The second keyword is free trade. We need to make inclusive rule for the free trade. Where the sustainable money comes from? I think the answer is sustainable economic growth. So free trade is still an important engine for sustainable economic growth. To achieve SDGs, we need to develop an inclusive free trade system, which the least developed country would join and benefit from. That point
has been mentioned by my colleague Wenfeng already. The third keyword is reform. Yeah, I'm from a reform think tank, so I think the last keyword is reform. We need to push forward the reform of financial system. Our financial system should target more and small and medium-sized enterprises, because SMEs on the whole is major resource of the employment and incomes. That's all. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much for staying on point and making a very strong statement in favor of free trade, which I totally agree with. Please, sir.
So money matters indeed. No money, no SDGs. SDGs, I agree, as long as it's investment. So I'm Martin Bernard. I'm working with Sanofi. It's a pharmaceutical company. Two things about this company. It's present in 100 countries in the world and since decades, so it's not new to us. And 66% of our business comes from chronic conditions. And chronic conditions, it's not only for developing economies. Chronic conditions, it's for all of us around the tables. And this is also embedded now in SDG goal number 3. What is new in comparison to the Millennium Development Goals is that we have now universal health coverage and chronic conditions. Now, my question to the speaker is, I'm sorry about the words, but how to get rid of a humanitarian approach of development? And I think that in the field of health, we collectively failed in building resilient healthcare systems. And that's exactly what happened with the Ebola crisis. So we're able to build silos for HIV/AIDS, for TB, for malaria. And those bring concrete results. But now we see that with chronic conditions, we come to an end with that. It doesn't work. And in 2011, Harvard came with a study showing that if we don't do anything in the field of chronic condition, we will lose $47 trillion over 15 years. So that means 2% of GDP growth lost. So how to shift from humanitarian to real development?
Thank you for making this very, very vividly clear to us. Thank you very much indeed. So Matsushita-san, please.
I'm Matsushita from JICA, Japanese Aid Agency. So I'm stationed currently in Brazil in FOE. Many colleagues already mentioned the importance of policy and reform of recipient side as well as money. In this context, I'd like to add a few things relating to donors' approach. I think we could say that a 2030 agenda consisting of 17 goals in the wide range would converge to the issue of financial inclusions. The issues of how to include the poor in financial systems. When we look back at the roles played by development finance, there has been a shift in the focus of donors and DFI from conventional financial modalities to the broader concept of financial inclusions, the provision of broader a range of formal financial services, including savings, payments, and transfers, and insurance and credit, etc. We could say that development finance industry has progressed, especially in these 10 years. In spite of these significant donor support and efforts, financial inclusion, there remain globally 2.5 billion people who are currently excluded and underserved by financial systems. So in order to promote and enhance the financial inclusion, which corresponds to the success of SDGs 2030 agenda, firstly, donors' role are much more required to support market mechanism. Donors should not focus only on filling the financial and technical resource gap, but on facilitating responsible market mechanism development. So finance resource gap approach should be altered. donors are required to think of their roles not as a provider of missing services in the market, but rather as facilitators who are incentivized and enable market actors to provide these financial services and perform their functions more effectively. But this facilitation role involves a more flexible engagement than conventional development programming. In this context, I think the main points required for donors' approach could be summarized in the 3 points. Firstly, financial support should be based on the needs of market, opposed to the instruments which donors possess or their menu of products. Secondly, intervention should be temporary, assuring that the support catalyzes other actors and do not distort market. This would require a responsible exit at the entry and putting in place benchmarks or identifying market signals as to when as exit is necessary. Now, finally, coordination with many actors engaging in the market are, of course, indispensable. These elements may be the key to the successful implementation of 2030 agenda. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So I'm going to give the floor very soon to Lee Yong and David, but I do have my colleague from IFDA who wants to say a few words very quickly, and then we'll wind this up.
Sure. Thank you. I promise very quickly. Well, I am a French refugee in Belgium. So I'm Jean-François Arnal, representing AFD here in Brussels. So I have heard very clever things tonight. How comes we are able to say so clever things? I should not say we, but you are able, because I didn't speak yet. I heard things like there is enough money. That's my colleague from AFD saying that, so I won't contradict him. I could hear things like we need bankable projects, we need to de-risk projects, we need not to fund roads from the airport to the presidential residency. I hope AFD didn't anytime finance this type of project. And how come we are able to say such things? It's because we are a coalition of actors. And we are representing governments, we are representing financial institutions, we are representing international organizations, we are representing NGOs, we are representing think tanks, and we are representing also European institutions, of course. And that's where it comes from. And I think if we are able to replicate this in all countries on the field, if we are able to build up this coalition of actors, then we'll be able to deliver on the SDGs. I mean, we are no longer living in a world where there is a private world on the one side, the public world on the other side. I could see in my Google, we are living in a world where there is imbrication. In Google, you say imbrication for tiles on a roof. That's exactly what we are. I mean, we are a roof for the SDGs. And if we are able to replicate this coalition of actors, everywhere where we are present, all of us, then we'll be able to deliver an SDG. Who is missing around this table today? National and regional banks. And if we are able to have them on board, domestic funds on board, then we'll be able to deliver, because what we need is exactly what partnerships, it's no longer a partnership actually, it's having everybody talk to each other around this table and on the field, on the ground. Thank you.
So while I eat my dessert, thank you very much indeed. I don't think I've left anyone out at this stage from... Ambassador, I had like, asked you and you didn't say yes, so please go ahead.
I would like also to use the opportunity that the mic is just right next to me. Thank you, Shanta, for hosting this wonderful dinner, which discusses the very relevant topic for all of us. SDG goals are the topics which are discussed in many forums, especially after its adoption last year. And this topic is also high on the agenda of the international idea as well. We are talking about the SDGs and how to implement. And also, there was some events which was comparing the SDGs with the Millennium Development Goals as well. And we are working on it. Discussions itself is quite important to understand what these goals mean for everybody and to bring the disseminated understanding to the all. Just listening to the comments which was told today, it comes to my mind that, okay, as far as these are the universal goals, there should be also there was also opinion that there should be national ownership as well. So it's also important, and we have to also define which goals and what ways should be implemented on the global level, on the regional, and on the national level as well, in order to bring everything in order for the sake of the implementation, I suppose. The policy is very important. Once the policy in place, I think the action plan will be worked out, and which means that which will also take into account the resources, the investments, plus the actors, those who will implement this, governments, business communities, civil society, or even ordinary people on the personal level as well. Therefore, combination of all these factors seems should be taken into consideration in order to move forward with this idea, which is also quite new compared with those we had with the Millennium Development Goal. But the circumstances 15 years ago or more was quite different what we have right now. So tomorrow also we will have our ADD. We will talk about also the development, which is the part of SDG, I suppose. Talking about the development, we will think about developing to some way. So there is a goals are already set. So we should discuss the ways we will to reach these goals. So for me, this today's discussion was very useful in terms of to understand what is on top on agenda and what are the opinions of many stakeholders to implement this goal. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ambassador. Thank you very much. That's exactly the point of a discussion on the eve of this big jamboree, where we will be discussing things in a much wider context. So just to give the floor again to our kick-starting discussants, very, very briefly, Li Yong yourself, and then David, to give a little bit of a taste of what you see and your comments after this discussion.
Thank you very much, Shada. I really enjoy this discussion. I learned a lot from the differing contributions from private sector, civil society, and the also development institutions. But I just would like to mention three letters. But before going to three letters, I would like to say money matters, but not decisive. Yeah. And if we would like to achieve the SDG, the country should have stability. It's a very important issue. Without stability, you cannot have economic activities. Second words is when we support the country as from different parts of the sector, social society, we should focus on the capacity building, capacity to develop. I really enjoy, appreciate the comments made by the lady. Give people fish, and also teaching people fishing is quite different. And we need to focus on the approach. And final letter is strategy, policy. I agree very much with the ambassador and also other colleagues here. And we should look at the approach. And there's three animals I really would like to mention here. One, Dr. Zuma, and African Union Commission Chairperson. She asked me, tell me, Lyon, what's a success story about the opening up a reform? I saw those kind of issues. I said, three animals. First is cow. The second is a fish. Third is a cat. And cow, give you a cow, a big fortune. How can you take it back home? Your poor leg, poor the tail, doesn't work. And you use a string, pull through the nose, you take the cow back home. This is very important. You catch the real issue. Yeah. And fish is a government need to be very, very careful about that. If you try to collect taxes at an early stage, not let the fish being raised like in Norway, a fishing farm. They first year, the only 0.5 pound. The second year, 4 pounds. The third year, 7 pounds. Your choice. Your choice. You would like to eat 0.5 pound fish, you go ahead. But you miss the 7 pound fish 2 years later. So this is also very important policy for a country. And final one's a cat. I really appreciate EU, and we actually being supported by EU for such a long time, largest donor to UNIDO, and through the financing to support many countries, developing countries. But now I really appreciate the policy generated by EU. The industrial ratio by 2020 raised to 20%, for two focuses, one's competitiveness and technology advancement. Mm. I attended the Hanover Messe. Chancellor Merkel, yes, mentioned industrial development 4.0 industry. And then she highly praised President Obama. Mm-hmm. For what? Reindustrialized America, exactly. After financial crisis, exactly. Start from the 2008. Mm. I think those are very good guidance for international community, for UNIDO to follow, that we should support country use very effective tool, industrial development, inclusive and sustainable industrial development. Mm. This is a very useful tool, colleagues, job creation, climate change issues, renewable energies, and circular economy, we reach the SDG through the inclusive, sustainable industrial development. Right. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Lyon. Thank you very much indeed. And David, you have, what, about 30 seconds to wrap up? That should do.
Very good. So first question really is to almost ask you to ask yourself, how do you feel after the last hour and a half? I'm not asking you to answer it, but I'm asking you to ask yourself. And my reason is as follows. Dealing with the elements of the sustainable development goals and all they represent is an emotional matter. It's not simply a rational intellectual process. You either feel comfortable with what's happening or you have to withdraw from it. And my hunch tonight is that the feeling is generally comfortable but with reservations. What are the reservations? Firstly, it's incredibly complicated. It doesn't fit with the way that many of us have been taught or have learnt or have conducted our lives. Most of us here are specialists, either in a sector or in a professional discipline or in a subject. But the 2030 Agenda says, thank you for your specialism, but could you please work horizontally? That's complicated. Number two, the 2030 Agenda is about including everyone, everywhere, every time, for everything. Like one of you was saying, that a key part of the infrastructure is being connected, but connected through the telephone as well as being connected by one belt, one road. That's pretty challenging. Thirdly, it means working together, but as we've done tonight, coming to the discussion without going in saying, I work for X and therefore I think Y, but instead, I work to achieve this outcome and therefore I think Z. So you come in and work without your institutional or mandate baggage. That's challenging for many of us because we identify with our institutions first and foremost. But tonight we didn't. So, we're dealing with a complex paradigm. We want to include everyone, everywhere, every time, for everything. We're having to learn to work together without our baggage. We're trying to think of all the different pieces that need to be in place. And yes, you can't do it without the money. So I think that doesn't need any more debate. But it's money plus a lot of other stuff, and everybody agrees on that. So, but we need those pieces. And then we've got the pieces, we're focusing on everybody everywhere, and we're trying to work together without our baggage. How do we manage all this? Answer, we think in terms of systems, and we see ourselves as people who are capable of tilting and adapting systems to new contexts. And that's the new thinking that's necessary. I'd love to work with you all, not just now, but forever, on how we can think, organize ourselves, communicate, adapt our working practices, and measure our achievements as a community rather than as a set of individuals, as an intersectoral family rather than as people from individual sectors. It's not going to be easy, but in my judgment, that's what's required to move from what's needed to what's being done to actually achieving the results. So thank you. I've learned a huge amount tonight. All of us from the UN, we're learning, learning, learning at the moment like sponges. And just in case you wondered what this is all about, I got a friend of mine to called Mick Hucknall. If it works, he'll tell us. But it takes a little bit of time to work. Do you know who Mick Hucknall is? I'm sorry for that. I didn't have my headphones.
But that was perfect. So thank you very much indeed, everyone. So really, we're talking about living and working together in the 21st century. And that requires participation, interaction, conversations, action among all of us. So thank you very much indeed, everyone. I think everyone got a word in, got a say in. And what it is all about is what you said, David, working together. And money does matter. So thank you very much. Let's all give ourselves a very, very warm hand, and then
her, really.
And then you can now.